Welcome to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. And for Orion Samuelson, I'm Steve Alexander. Max Armstrong will be joining us in just a bit. Let's see where we wound up the week on Friday. It was a dramatic session on Friday on Wall Street. But at the end, little change as stocks pared losses after the Republicans pulled their bill to overhaul the U.S. healthcare system. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 58 points at 20,598. The S&P 500 lost about 2 points at 2344. And the NASDAQ added 11 points at 5828. In fact, the NASDAQ was up considerably for most of the session on Friday. For the week, the Dow was down 1.5%. The S&P 500 was down 1.4%. And the NASDAQ was down 1.2%. Easily the worst week of the year so far for the equity markets. We'll be talking in just a few minutes with Bob Iacino of Path Trading Partners about this week on Wall Street. Taking a look at some of the commodities, gold rose for a second week as the dollar was hampered by the health care vote and the uncertainty therein. Gold rose on Friday, its second straight week of gains. Concerns about the ability of the president to push legislation through Congress, not only the health care, but also tax reform and infrastructure spending, that pressured the dollar, making bullion cheaper for holders of other currencies. After hours, though, after the word came in that there would not be a vote on the Republican plan, gold turned slightly lower. The dollar remained near 7-week lows against a basket of currencies. Silver was up 1% at $1,791 an ounce. Platinum was just over 0.5% higher at $964.50 an ounce. Palladium, which is used in catalytic converters, was up 1.4% at $810 an ounce, and during the session hit $815, which was a 2-year high. Checking oil futures, they were modestly higher on Friday in a spate of late-day activity, but fell for the week on continuing concerns about excess supply of crude worldwide. West Texas Intermediate, the Texas T, settled up 27 cents at $47.97 a barrel, but lost 0.5% on the week. Brent crude ended up 24 cents at $50.80 and ended down 1.8% for the week. Oil has been struggling for more than 2 weeks now after a string of U.S. inventory reports suggested that output cuts by the OPEC countries were not having the desired effect in reducing global supply. Checking ag commodities, let's begin with soybean futures, down 1.6% on Friday, their lowest level in more than 5 months on pressure of rising forecasts for already robust South American harvests and the expectation that more farmers are going to convert from corn to soybeans or convert from other crops to soybeans when the planting intentions report comes out on March 31st. Corn futures also weakened, hitting their lowest level since January 13th. And soft red winter wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade rose on bargain buying following 4 straight days of declines. All 3 commodities posted weekly losses. Wheat and soybean futures have fallen for 3 weeks in a row now, the longest string of weekly losses for wheat since a 4-week stretch that ended in early July of 2016. Weakness in the cash market and rising expectations for soy plantings this year, as I mentioned, added pressure to soybeans. Soybean spot basis bids fell by 5 cents a bushel at a closely watched processor in Decatur, Illinois. Cash bids for both corn and beans were steady to lower at other processors and elevators around the Midwest. At the Chicago Board of Trade, May beans were down 15 and a quarter cents at 975 and three quarters cents per bushel. The most active contract had bottomed out at its lowest level since October 19th, down about 2.5% for the week. Corn for May delivery ended 0.5 cents lower, 356 and a quarter a bushel, and May wheat rose 3.75 cents at 424 and three quarters a bushel. Coming up after the break, Bob Iacino of Path Trading Partners in Chicago gives us some expert analysis of what we saw on Wall Street this week.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Welcome back to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. And for Orion Samuelson, I am Steve Alexander. And joining me on the phone to try to make some sense of what happened on Wall Street this week is Bob Iacino of Path Trading Partners in Chicago. Well, Bob, certainly no lack of uncertainty on Wall Street this week with this health care bill being at the forefront as we look at trading in the Trump era. Give me the recap of your week.
Well, my week was spent really avoiding equities, quite frankly, and that's, I'm obviously going to be a lot more short-term than probably most of the people that are listening to us right now, but I really did what the market has shown me in the past I should do when you see the volatility index creeping up the way it is, and when you see the outcome of something that is so impossible to predict potentially happening day after day. I mean, we had the talk of the healthcare vote on Wednesday, then the scheduled vote without a time schedule on Thursday, and then again the scheduled vote on Friday with a time attached to it, and then the ultimate postponement because there weren't the votes. To me, the postponement is the same as failure, but this particular bill had a lot of uncertainties to it, depending on how the markets would react if it even passed. So for me, it was just a matter of staying away from the equities, and you saw that in the volume, and you saw that in the movement. It just wasn't much of a week.
How much was volume down this week?
It's probably about 20% from the norms, and definitely not anywhere near where it should be, given how close we were to the highs. We sort of drifted lower most of the week, and I'm getting a lot of topping patterns in the equity markets now, and you could kind of see how this could play out from a fundamental perspective in terms of an actual short-term correction coming, but I'd be a buyer of that correction before you even ask me.
I'm sure this is a really simple analysis of what we've been seeing since the election, but it's a rally based on expectations of what Trump was going to do and bring. Healthcare, certainly it was one facet of it, but perhaps even more important for people trading is tax reform and the infrastructure spending. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's a great characterization, Steve. What people are looking for is what they've been sort of calling tongue-in-cheek, the Holy Trinity, which is the rollback of regulations, which has begun, the fiscal stimulus in terms of an infrastructure plan, and the tax cuts. And those tax cuts are threefold, actually. They're a corporate tax cut just in general. They're repatriation of foreign funds, which theoretically was going to be used to pay for some, if not all, of the infrastructure. And then individual tax cuts, which is admittedly, and when I say admittedly, I mean by the administration, probably pushed back to next year. That's probably not going to happen in 2017. But the interesting thing about this administration, whether you support them or not, is we're getting the first opportunity to see this sort of real estate negotiator in action, where Donald Trump says, vote on it today or we're moving on to the next thing. We're walking away. That sounds very much like a real estate deal. You know, you give me my interest rate and give me my tax credit on this land I'm about to build on, or I'm just moving on to the next project. And that's what he seems to be doing here. And I actually think that could be a good thing because most of the market wants him to work on tax cuts, not on Obamacare. That may be different from what the people that voted for him want, but it's definitely what the market wants.
I was wondering if that wasn't just getting this thing out of the way, one way or the other, wasn't what the markets were waiting for.
I totally agree with you. Again, if this particular version of the bill would have passed, it would go into the Senate to get sliced and diced anyway, and then may never come out of the Senate. So it was a very early step to what was going to happen, number one. Number two, if it failed, which we can call this a failure, I mean, unless they think they're going to vote on the exact same bill next Monday or Tuesday and pass it, this is a failure. And then everything remains the same. And arguably, things were starting to look up anyway from the data standpoint, both here and in Europe. So if this thing is just left alone, that's pretty much what most of the business community wants anyway. Just tell us what the rules are and leave us alone. So changes are never really good at their core for the market. When you get a change, then the devil's in the details. When you don't get a change, it's status quo. And I believe in sort of American ingenuity and the specialness of this country, for lack of a better word, to just take the rules as they are and produce jobs and produce income.
Will you be back in equities next week?
I will be, and it really has a lot to do with what happens with this vote, but I will be. I'm looking for dips to buy in equities. I've actually got some small short positions here and there. Some of the things that I shorted, interestingly enough, are stocks associated with infrastructure spending, because I think that the tax bill has to come first. So once the health care bill came before the tax bill, I knew the infrastructure spending, or at least I speculated, that the infrastructure spending was going to be pushed back. So that got me short some of those stocks that were rallying from that. But I'll be looking for places to buy dips very soon if we get the dips I'm looking for.
Do you fear that the components that caused the defeat of the health care bill, or the failure, I should say, of the health care bill, will play out in some of the other things that Trump wants to get done?
That's a great question. I do fear it, but I don't expect it, and here's why. I think with health care, you go right back to the party divide. You go right back to Democrats versus Republicans in a straight party line, and then you even get to the point where what they call the Freedom Caucus, which is basically the remnants of the Tea Party, start to argue with whether these particular principles are conservative or not. But with tax cuts, there's very little, there's no obstacles to tax cuts. The Democrats and Hillary Clinton were talking about tax cuts as well, about reforming the tax system. So at their core, it's not necessarily down party lines. Now, there may be arguing about the numbers, but right now, whether we end up with a 15% rate, base level corporate taxes, which is not going to happen, a 20, a 25, it's all a cut. So I think tax reform will get done, and it's probably part of the reason that he left it for a little later in the process, because it will probably be easier.
My guest is Bob Iacino of Path Trading Partners in Chicago. Bob, do traders pay much attention to all of the non-platform issues surrounding Trump, the Russia gate, whatever you want to call it, that type of stuff?
No, because minus Trump, you have Mike Pence. That's what impeachment would bring us. It would bring us a President Pence. So while it would be, it would bring some volatility to the market that isn't welcomed, the policies probably remain the same. And quite frankly, the politicians have seen what these kind of policies will do, at least from a market perspective. We obviously haven't seen job growth accelerate based on Trump policies. It has accelerated, but it's way too early to give the credit to any Donald Trump policies. So, no, it doesn't really worry traders from that standpoint. As a matter of fact, you might be able to get more done simply because of the less abrasive nature of Mike Pence, but he also tends to be a little bit more with the Christian right, and that could be a negative in terms of negotiating for certain things. But the short answer is no, not really.
You mentioned the word correction a while back. Let's go back to that, and I forget the context that you brought it up in, but what was that?
Well, I'm getting some topping patterns on a lot of stocks. I have a couple of algorithms and a couple of sort of filters that I run looking for these particular topping patterns, and I'm getting a lot of them. So what that means is not that the stocks are going to collapse, but that they may have reached their high for a period of time. Some of these stocks are shortable and some are not. Like, for example, you can short Amazon, but I would not, although I am getting a topping pattern on Amazon. I would rather accumulate Amazon lower. So that's what I'm looking for, is for stocks like Amazon and things like that, that where I see a correction coming, I can stop my regular pattern of buying those stocks and try and get a little bit cheaper to increase my ROI over time. Other stocks I can short, like Vulcan Materials is one, VMC. Full disclosure, clients of mine are in that stock, but I'm not, and my family's not. Vulcan Materials is one of the stocks that benefited from the potential to get the contract for the wall. That is clearly not going to happen anytime soon. And as infrastructure spending gets pushed back further and further, stocks that were rallying off of infrastructure spending will fall, and they have. We started to get short our clients anyway, Vulcan Materials around 125, and it traded in the high 111s today, about 111.86 I saw last time I looked at it. So those are the things we're looking for. But these are not indictments of the whole market. They're not indictments of the next earnings season, which I think will actually be a really strong one. It's just the excuse for the average person to accumulate some of the stocks you want to accumulate at a better price.
I can't let you go without asking about the Fed. It did what it was expected in its most recent meeting. Do you expect any surprises from the Fed going forward?
I don't. I think this particular Fed is better at communicating what they're going to do than the Bernanke Fed, the Greenspan Fed, or the Volcker Fed, although the Volcker Fed didn't really communicate. They just did things. The Volcker Fed was much more active. Having said that, they seem to come out and tell us what they're going to do. I think we saw that in the March meeting. So they keep saying that three rate hikes are possible this year, three rate hikes are possible this year. I think the mistake that traders make all the time is they put their opinion of what the Fed should do in the way of what the Fed is telling us they're going to do. The Fed is telling us three rate hikes. I'm going to take them at their word. And as we approach the next meeting, they seem to be very willing to communicate whether that's still the case or not. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
Bob Iacino of Path Trading Partners in Chicago. How do people reach you, Bob?
They can reach me by just shoot an email to support@PathTradingPartners. That will actually go to me through our support system. Also, you can go to PathTradingPartners.com, and we do a podcast every week, the Money Path Podcast, and we're really proud of that. The thing is growing at an exponential rate, and we really enjoy doing that. So you can also just listen to us on the Money Path Podcast.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Steve.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Welcome back to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. I'm Steve Alexander, in for Orion Samuelson, and here comes our old buddy, Max Armstrong.
Steve Georgie from Allendale, joining us in the studio this weekend, looming on the horizon, a major USDA report Friday. Yeah, the March 31st Prospective Plantings Report. The survey has been done days ago, I suspect, of those conversations and the emails and the text that went out to farmers, getting their views on what they're going to be planting. The big numbers are the corn and soybean numbers, right, Steve?
That is correct. You know, and that's really what the primary focus is going to be. When you really get into it and you look at what the industry is expecting, and it is almost across the board. As you get more people releasing their findings, their numbers, their estimates, right around 90 million acres for corn is what the expectation is. Somewhere close to 88 million, a record for soybeans. I mean, that is a massive amount. Then the question will end up turning, what kind of yield are we going to be looking at? We're going to know the acres, but what kind of production numbers can we see? And that's when you look at people's balance sheets, they have everything across the board. Is this going to be bullish? Is it bearish? Where are we headed from here? We need to be very careful this time of year. Seems like the funds like to buy everything. But this report is going to be extremely important to see what kind of numbers we get as far as starting off for the new marketing season on new crop.
We have heard some soybean estimates as high as 90 million. Is that kind of an outlier there as far as the estimates are concerned?
You know, when you hear numbers like that, what happens is when you take the total acreage picture and you start dividing it up and trying to decide where things go, there's about this 3 million acres that is just, where did it go? So people, when you start hearing a lot of these bigger numbers, those 3 million acres, some of that's going back into CRP. Some of that's going into the other 25 category, some of the non-row crops. And so, you know, this is where price levels are right now. You do have guys pushing acreage, some of that fringe acres back into more of the CRP program. And so you can't expect to keep acreage continuing to grow like we've seen. And so, you know, I think realistic numbers, when we look at 90 million acres for corn, 88 in the beans, I think these could be very realistic as we go forward.
I was talking with some growers this week, especially from the Eastern Corn Belt. They were from Indiana, Ohio, Eastern Illinois, and they said, you know what, we don't mess with ours much. We kind of keep a 50-50 balance. Where is it that the growers do tend to shift a little more?
You know, what we found out from our survey, and actually pretty amazing, is that when you look at the farmer that might be that 2,500-acre and less type producer, they do stick with their regular rotations. There is no messing around. This is what we've done. This is the way we're going to do it. But it is the larger producer. And that larger producer, as he's looking at his balance, as he's talking to his banker, and as they put together their marketing plan, they're profitable right now in beans. They're shifting to beans. And so it is the larger producer that will be shifting to beans this year. The smaller guy, probably going to end up seeing a lot of back and forth and a lot of regular rotation.
But did some of the bloom come off the attractiveness of beans in recent weeks with the prices slipping back down to where they've been?
You know, it has, but so has corn. So we got to remember that, too. The big thing in corn that you have to, after this report, no matter what the acreage says in this report, we cannot forget that there's 2.3 billion bushel carryout out there for corn. There's still massive piles that have to be moved. And so when we look at that in this, you know, the beans, a lot of the beans have been sold. But for corn, we still have some issues up front. And so that may try to keep price under pressure as we go into this April, May, and even into June. We need to get some kind of a summer rally in order to get corn prices to be more attractive again. And so has it taken a little off the beans? Yeah, it has. But moving forward, corn doesn't look so hot either. So a lot of struggles here ahead for corn yet.
What have the managed funds been doing with their positions in recent weeks? Am I correct that they have really lightened up their long positions?
You know, they certainly have. And basically, they have gotten back to neutral. And so just as the rest of the industry is scratching their heads, so is the funds. But we have to look at it in this sense. Last year at this time, after this report, the funds ended up taking a long position in beans. And why? And that's because of China's appetite for beans. Does South America have a record crop? Yes, they do. Did they plant more acres? Yes, they did. We're going to be planting more acres here as well. Yes. But the demand for soybeans right now is what's going to keep prices continuing to stay strong. After this report, funds ended up deciding to buy beans. And they bought beans because of the what if. What if we don't have a trend line yield this coming year? What if we don't have the beans or we start seeing some else? They start looking at problems versus thinking the crop is just going to be exceptional. And so that for the next 3 months is where they start building a position. And I have a feeling that they may end up doing that again moving forward.
But let's assume for the sake of argument here for just a moment that a large acreage number comes in on soybeans. That would temper the enthusiasm, would it not, for beans?
It really will. But here's the other thing is that guys are already expecting that. We've already been talking about it, and yet we still struggle. New crop beans are still struggling around 10 bucks. Tell me why we're not near 9. We probably ought to be a lot lower than we currently are. But it is that unknown. It is the fact that the funds are still long beans. They have not let go, and we have been profitable. So we continue to export at a decent demand. So will we see that massive drop? I'm not sure. The entire industry says that we should. But yet we have to kind of question, why are we not there then? And so a little bit of caution after this report. We know what happened last year with the funds coming in, starting to build a position because of weather. Maybe we might see that again. So we do need to be a little cautious on why we are not near $9 and we are still sitting near 10.
A lot of people here are thinking, wow, this is going to be such a market mover, such a big report. What is the possibility the thing could be just neutral? You look at the numbers and you say, okay, there's nothing new here.
You know, as far as the acreage side, that might be the case. We have another component that's going to be out next Friday as well, and that's the quarterly stock numbers. And if you can remember back a few years ago, it is that feed and residual category that is a huge unknown. And so when we look at these numbers, where could the biggest surprise be? It may not be acres because we may be talking about it already. It may already be in the market. But the thing that it could end up being a bigger market turner may end up being that quarterly stock number where maybe we've got usage that is more or even less. That number will have to be watched very closely if we can get a surprise. I think it's mostly going to be on quarterly stocks. The acreage, we're already talking about it.
That seed and residual use number tends to be where they just they do the juggling, right? I mean, that's the one say, okay, well, we're not sure, but we've got this extra stuff. Let's just go for residual.
Well, that's exactly right. And then, you know, in the industry, we kind of laugh at it because that's what USDA has in their back pocket, you know, and what they want to do. But, you know, that category in itself has been just all over the board. There is no good way to track what that category may be on more of a weekly or monthly basis. And that's why it is such a drastic difference when they finally have to show their cards at the end of a quarter.
Knowing how critical the weather on into the middle part of July can be, and of course for soybeans on into August. What's the talk in your shop? How do you guys look at the summer weather right now and the way it appears it could affect the crop size ultimately?
You know, we've done a lot of conferences already and spoke with a lot of weather guys out there in the industry. And most of the guys are already saying that, hey, you know, we're going to just see a return back to trendline yields. There will be some problems in certain areas. You're going to see great crops in certain areas. We're going to return to trendline. But
so in other words, no fantastic yields none that spike higher on the chart, back down to what you're saying is trend line. That's not fantastic.
No, but you're not talking.
That's a concern to the grower if you've got low prices.
Potentially. I mean, what happened last year is we were talking this time of year of La Nina, right? We were going to get hot and dry and it was going to be terrible never to see rain again. We came in on June 18th that weekend, and what happened through Iowa? We got rain, and it continued to rain. So a lot of the forecasters were wrong last year. And so that unknown this year, guys are saying, hey, we're going to see trend line again. I don't know if that's just a safeguard that they're playing because they don't know, but I've already been getting emails talking about La Nina, a lighter La Nina back in the later part of the growing season. Guys are now starting to promote that a little bit. So those types of ideas, a normal crop doesn't get anybody excited. When you talk about fund money, as we had before, what it is, it's the fact of the unknown. And so as you start getting these guys talking about issues and problems, maybe it's too hot, too cold, too dry, too wet, too something, that is what affects these guys, and that's what drives the market volatility. And I suspect that we probably will see that again at some point and give some life back to these markets and give an opportunity for the farmers out there to really get some marketing done.
Steve, what about the outside markets? We've seen crude oil very tame, down under $50 a barrel. We've seen the stock market some days of late not exactly having a rip-roaring performance. A little bit of concern about whether or not the president's agenda will be achieved. Also, interest rates ticking up a little bit. Witness the fact that the Fed now has acted for the third time. Do these impact the picture? How do they impact the picture? One can imagine the dollar strength is a factor.
You know, yes, inflation always is something that we have to watch. And I think the Fed has already planned out. They're wanting to move rates three times this year. They've got that plan implemented. They're sticking to what they said. But I think the bigger issues that may affect commodities, the TPP, so the trans-partnership, how is that going to affect things? At first, it was going to be this chaos and well, we've never really seen that. NAFTA, redesigning it. How is that going to be moved? What steps has our president done to really anger some of these other countries? We really haven't seen any of our demand slow down yet. And so a lot of what was said before, that these issues may become bigger issues as we move forward, we really haven't seen that. So when we talk about some of these outside influences, like energy staying below $50 a barrel right now, we continue to see builds as far as crude oil. All of the products are still looking very good. All of this stuff kind of filters in, and it just shows that we really don't have a lot of uncertainty right now. What could happen with the stock market? What could end up happening with money flow? Because at this time of year, how many times have you heard guys talk about money flow? Well, here it is. That money right now is still going into stocks with this record run that we've been on. We haven't seen anything change. So everyone wants to talk about it, but yet it's been pretty calm for what has happened. So moving forward, though, yes, there is always something that's going to rock us off our rocker, and I'm not sure what that is yet.
Steve, thank you for coming in. We always appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Steve Georgie with Allendale.
Thank you, Max. Let's run the numbers again for the week. The Dow was down 1.5%. The S&P was off 1.4%. The NASDAQ was down 1.2%. But as Bob Iacino of Path Trading Partners mentioned in an interview just a few minutes ago, the failure of the health care bill will allow traders to move on to something else that perhaps has a little bit more traction, such as either tax reform or infrastructure spending, depending upon how Congress brings it up. At the Chicago Board of Trade, corn, beans, and wheat all lost ground this week. Corn was down 3.2%, beans were off 2.5%, and wheat was down 2.4%. Corn ending at 356 and a quarter a bushel for May delivery, beans 975 and three quarters a bushel, and wheat at 424 and three quarters cent per bushel. Crude oil had a bit of a flourish at the end, but was down for the week by 0.5%, ending at $47.97. And gold was up 1.6% this week, the second weekly gain in a row. I thank you for joining me for The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. In for Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong, I'm Steve Alexander.